Empower Radio presents The Butterfly Moment. It's the classic quantum leap in personal growth. Now here are your hosts for The Butterfly Moment, John Shelter and Carrie Hall on Empower Radio.
Happy New Year to everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm John Shelter.
Hey, I'm Carrie Hall, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, we are both life coaches. Carrie, did you ever wonder why we say Happy New Year or Merry Christmas during the holidays, but don't do that all year?
Wow. That's good, John.
It's such a positive greeting that, you know.
It is. Like, happy day.
Yeah. That you have happiness, that you have merriment, that you have all kinds of good things happening. We should, maybe we'll try that this next 2016, correct?
That's good, John. I like it.
You can be, we can both be reached at our website, butterflycoach.com. We're really, really excited. We've got a great show set up for you today, so hang in there. We'll get to it in just a minute. On every one of our programs, we talk about what the butterfly moment is. You're probably wondering that yourself if you're a new listener. It's a classic quantum leap. As the life energies slowly break loose the caterpillar from the cocoon, something truly incredible occurs. The caterpillar suddenly realizes that the darkness and despair it has experienced in the cocoon was no longer its reality. The caterpillar is a butterfly, one of the most beautiful insects in the world. And best of all, it can fly. And so with that in mind, I've got a couple questions for you for 2016. What would you do this year if you knew that you could not fail? And why aren't you going to do it? What is that person that you'd like to become in 2016? Have you introduced yourself to that person? And lastly, what will be your butterfly moment this coming year? That moment of transcendence. That moment of I can do it. That aha moment. Look for it, and it will be there. We'll be talking today in interviewing a very, very good friend of mine and probably one of the most talented people I know, Dr. Henry Woodworth. Carrie, can you tell us a little bit about Dr. Henry?
Well, hey, Dr. Henry Woodworth has quite the CV here. Hi, doctor.
Hi.
You graduated from Michigan State University, College of Human Medicine, and also completed 5 years postdoctoral specialization training, including adult psychiatry residency and a fellowship in child and adolescent psychology, psychiatry, both at U of M, correct?
That's true.
And then you founded the Center for Reconstructive Psychiatry. And then there's all kinds of other things that you do that I can't even pronounce, like twice exceptionality and overexcitabilities and asynchronous development, along with ADHD, trauma, anxiety. You treat teens with severe emotional traumas. I guess we could say that.
That's true.
And that's amazing. You've been in private practice for over 25 years, and you are the medical director at Havenwick Hospital in Auburn Hills for over 20 years.
That's
wow.
Right.
Are you tired?
All the time.
My gosh, that's wonderful. You know what, Doctor? Right, I don't even know how to seg into this, but we were talking a little bit, and you were talking a little bit about fear and to acknowledge that you're afraid. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I can, but first, I just wanted to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you.
I'll try to say it all year to you, John.
Oh, I love it. You've made my day.
Yeah, I think, one of my butterfly moments was when I took a psychology class in college. And because I guess the way my brain's wired up, I noticed often people were not doing things for the reason they said they were, but I couldn't figure out why they did that. I'm not saying that they were running around trying to lie. They just didn't make any sense, but they believed it. There's a lot of problems in belief systems that drive you and all that sort of thing. When I took psychology for the first time, I went, oh, this explains it. This explains what's going on. I also have to say something kind of funny. I think I'm channeling Sigmund Freud because I was born on his birthday.
Oh, how interesting.
Okay.
So anyway, as soon as I saw psychology, what the basis of it is that the unconscious mind is really where most of the work is being done moment to moment in terms of calculating whatever's coming next and how to figure out what to do. So that unconscious mind, we have 100 billion neurons, those are little wires running back and forth, talking to each other in the top part of our brain, 100 billion. And if you, it's kind of like your computer. If you put everything inside the computer up on the screen would go white. So you can't do that. You've got to have it working down below and just put what you need up on the screen.
Hmm.
You could say ADD, for instance, is an example where there's sometimes too much stuff on the screen. Right now, everybody's saying, oh, I can multitask, but the brain's actually not supposed to be multitasking in the conscious mind. It's supposed to do it in the unconscious mind. And you really should have a clear head on what's going on. So when you start to realize that the unconscious mind is where the action is, well, first of all, if you ask people about something, they'll say, well, here's what I was thinking. But that's what you were aware you were thinking. The question is, what's the rest of what you were thinking? And what is the power of the human being is our ability with pattern recognition. I guess some physicists are starting to say that maybe the human brain is more complicated than the whole universe we're living in. I don't know if that's going to turn out to be true, but
that's daunting.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty amazing. So you realize all that's got to be going down underneath, and whatever is up in our conscious mind is what we're doing at the moment. Like right now, I'm talking and you're listening, and then you were talking, I was listening, and I'm pretty focused here, but my brain is actually tracking huge amount of things. And if we suddenly heard a big gunshot, we would have to quit what we're doing and worry about that until we figured out it wasn't a gunshot, it was a car that backfired, let's say, at which point our brain would go, okay, then let's go on. But we couldn't keep doing what we're doing if one of us here, I'm not on the premises with you, thought we heard a gunshot. We would have to quickly shift.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, that quick shift is what turns out to be my area of interest, because that is what fear is about. And once I got into psychology many years ago, before I went to medical school and all that, I began to realize that we're all making choices moment to moment with this giant brain. And the circuitry for fear, or how fear is being processed, is coming on and off all the time. And what's really amazing is that the brain is wired. It's wired up in a good way to help us to actually see things differently, whether we're looking at them through the lens of fear or we're looking at them through the lens of confidence and feeling relaxed and loved and cared for and all that.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yep.
Since we started out with Happy New Year, what would be the one word of advice you could give to our listeners of how to be happier in 2016? Is there such a thing as a word of advice concerning that? It's a big topic.
Yeah, I think one of the main things is to, if you can begin to be okay with the idea that what's in your head may not be the whole story, then when you've got something that you're a little uncomfortable with, or when you have a strange thought pop in your head, or when you come out of a dream in the morning or even the middle of the night and something's bothering you, you should talk to someone. And when you talk to people, see, the thing is, we want to feel good about ourselves. So we think that if we start talking about what we're afraid of, then it sort of means in our mind, our minds are wired up to go, that means you're scared, you're not very good, you're vulnerable, you're all these things. But the complexity that we of the good world we live in, where we have enough food and we have enough of the things we need, is that complexity is where the answers are. And we've got to learn to listen to them. And the first thing to do is find someone you trust and talk to them and try to talk about the weird things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, can this even be a friend or a spouse? Or
absolutely, it can be a friend. It can be a spouse. However, the only trouble with spouses or your significant other or whoever that is you may have already developed a pattern in which you don't think it's okay to talk about things. So I certainly would say if it's, very serious, if it turns out to be important, talk to someone who you trust, who's a mentor, even go see a psychologist or someone. But the first part that's really the big thing that's in the way, what I see in our society, is we're so invested in being right and being better than others that we don't listen to these momentary thoughts that the brain leaks up that are a chance to pull them up and work on them with somebody. You can go in the bathroom, and if you can figure out what you're afraid of, look yourself in the mirror and scream into the mirror those things until you laugh.
Is that a way of breaking down the fear, or is that a way of becoming friends with it? Or
yeah, the thing is that now if you know if someone's really trying to get me, hurt me, well then my fear circuitry is there to help me.
Yeah,
you're going to do what you're going to do. The one who wrote about this so well was P.I. But he's the one who wrote the hierarchy of.
Maslow?
Maslow, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
The hierarchy of, you know, when you're worried about enough food or having enough food, that's all you can worry about. But if you've got enough of that, then you want safety. If you got enough safety, then you want to get loved. But if you get enough love, then the next thing you want is self-esteem. And that's really what our world right now is caught in, is moment to moment, am I good enough? Am I enough of what it is I think I'm supposed to be? Which actually, as soon as the fear circuitry comes on, it undermines that.
Well, here's another question I have. I'm of the belief that whatever you think about expands. And so when do we know we're done expressing our fears and then are not preoccupied so that fear expands and overlaps into our life and everything we do? We may need to talk about it, but we don't want to talk. We don't want it to dominate our lives, right?
Right. Writing things, you know, keeping a journal, talking to people on a regular basis. If you look at people in recovery, that's really where AA came from, is I need to make these connections to get this stuff out so that I'm not being unknowingly, my unconscious isn't driving me down that unproductive role. If I could say one more thing about the circuitry, the brain is designed to protect you. To say that if I think we're in trouble here, it's going to leave out tons of things for processing. In the same way that when you're nervous, you tend to have diarrhea and, sorry to be graphic, and not keep food in, or your eyes change. Your whole body changes when you're slipping into fear. So when you're making important decisions in your life that are based on your insecurities, you're going to make dumb decisions, and that's what's going on so much of the time. Meditation helps. The Harvard study recently that showed that meditation grows gray matter in the top part of your brain. It actually grows the brain. But I think the main thing is, first, what I'm trying to say is you've just got to be open to the idea that this wonderful circuit that's trying to protect you can backfire in our society now by being on you about self-esteem all the time, that you're not adequate, and then start shutting your brain off unknowingly and making dumber and dumber decisions.
I think Maya Angelou had it nailed, and Oprah's a big fan and likes to quote her, "You are enough." Maya Angelou used to say, "You are enough."
You know, Doctor, one of the most impressive things that you've taught to me is by way of how you work with young people, you know, kids, teenagers, and the special way that you approach some really disabling things that they're going through. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, you know, I work at John. You know this, and maybe you've talked care about, but I work and have worked for a long time with kids who are terribly traumatized. And interestingly, the other group I work with so much now are what would be called the gifted. My wife is doing a dissertation on how important it is to be able to be seen to get a sense of confidence within yourself. So these are both populations that are having terrible problems because they feel very, very different and don't know what to do with it. In both cases, interestingly, though, you often get to see things that others don't see. So back to the trauma group, they have been through horrific things that make them see things that others don't see. They will even sometimes have mystical experiences once they've started to get the trauma under control. But what post-traumatic stress disorder is really about, it's quite simple, is that swing from the relaxed large brain, 100 billion nerves working well, into my scared brain, which is designed to turn off information so I can make it through a difficult situation. The swing that my nervous system is set up to have when I need it swings too fast for these people. So they swing into it when there really isn't something that they have to be that nervous about, and are over in the fight or flight system. And the fight or flight system is where you do really crazy things. It's fight, flight, or freeze, in that you've either got to run like hell or you got to take someone out. And so they end up making bad choices.
Bad decisions.
Really bad decisions that backfire. And then they're often misunderstood to be bad people.
Right. And unfortunately affects their whole life, and in some cases become incarcerated. And
yep. Hmm. You have someone in your life who's become sort of like family, who was incarcerated for these dumb reasons. I have someone I work with who the incarceration system is way out of control.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting people away where it's not helping anyone. And actually, incarceration just aggravates post-traumatic stress disorder because they're scared all the time of the things that are going on in there. But in general, the first thing that's, I think, helpful to people who have been traumatized is desensitization. I've got to get to where I can look at it and touch it, but without it triggering over and over again a bad feeling. So as the Butterfly Foundation is working on art and literature and music and what are really right brain dominant characteristics, help get the stuff out.
Hmm.
And then psychoeducation is actually what's so helpful, is for them to start to understand that this is post-traumatic stress disorder. It's funny. It's, again, this fight or flight system that's designed to swing to protect you that's swinging too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And to begin to find ways to slow down or catch it before it swings all the way.
Doctor, just quickly, if you could recommend any books or films off the top of your head to our readers that would help them understand this a little bit more. Or just some of your favorite. I know you were a big fan of Dr. Amen.
Yeah, in terms of ADD, Dr. Amen, who I know, and he's really an amazing person, he does the brain scanning. They actually went after him to try to take his license way back because he was just so far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Example of that. But I was going to have the second brain scanner in the country, and I was really too nervous of what was maybe going to happen to him. He won, really, and that's great. I've just sent people to him. And when you get the brain scan and you see that there are variations in the brain that have happened, let's say, from trauma, or you see it in other ways with ADD, it's very helpful. It's helpful to the person who had it often because they, for the first time again, don't think there's something bad about them or wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the hardest part about all this. Again, this is back to self-esteem. Why I call it reconstructive psychiatry these days is I think we're good psychiatry is much more like plastic surgery. We're either all crazy or none of us are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that some of you are screwed up and others are not.
Right.
That's a self-esteem driven issue. But can we do things that further optimize what your potential is? And I know that's what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
Is how do I find whatever is the best for me, given what my brain is? And that's where scans and medication and therapies and structural systems that are not jails and all
right.
that
mm-hmm.
are being shown mm-hmm. to really help us find that self. But again, I think my area of interest has been you first have to be okay that that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think fear is so interesting. It's not talked about enough in psychiatry, in my opinion. And yet here's this normal circuit that is undoing me over and over again in terms of my decision-making mm-hmm. based on self-esteem.
You know, you talked about the Butterfly Foundation, and, you know, we're both great friends with Chip and Lisa.
Yeah.
Why are they getting such great results bringing the arts to at-risk kids? What's going on there?
Well, I have a lot of opinions about everything, and I think they align with the neurosciences, but I don't think, you know, I have to do the disclaimer, I don't think it's all settled yet. My area of interest has been, along with fear, our hemispheres of the brain, the left and right hemisphere, and it's now looked at as the left hemisphere, which, by the way, is running the right side of the body. The left hemisphere is where the rules are, and the right hemisphere is where the exceptions to the rules are. So when it's all working out and going well, in fact, I'll ask people, which do you think is more important, the rules or the exception to the rules? And it's kind of funny because whichever is their dominant hemisphere, it appears, we haven't done an official study, that's the one they'll tell you is the important one. So a lot of people say, no, the rules are important. A lot of people will say the exception to the rules are important. But what's interesting is that art and understanding and concepts and mind maps, they're all in the right brain. Yet this is a left brain driven society where here's what you do, do that, it'll all work out. If you do this well, you'll be higher up than them, so your self-esteem can be good. It's this competitive thing. Well, once you've been traumatized, you've got to have a new way of looking at it. And I think that the art and literature and those things that Chip talks about that saved him from the horrible traumas he was experienced as a child, those are the place that you can go and find a different way of looking at things. And that's why I think it's very fascinating that often people with traumas also sometimes see things better than other people who weren't traumatized.
Yeah, in a whole different way. Once again, I just would like to say we're speaking with Dr. Henry Woodworth, MD, and child and adolescent psychiatrist. Sorry, doctor.
Doctor, if one of our listeners wanted to get a hold of you concerning either your practice or some of your more creative projects that we'll talk about in just a minute, how would they do that?
Well, they could contact you.
Okay.
you can find me because we get together in our work on the project. Well, they can go to our website, which is, what's it called again?
The Butterfly, Butterfly Foundation. You can Google that.
Yeah.
You can Google Empower Radio, and you can we can even Google Dr. Henry Woodworth.
Okay. Yeah, could you talk about, we've got about 3 minutes. I want to talk because you're such a creative guy. You're a musician, you're a songwriter, a poet, and you've written books for children. Could you just brief us on what you have going there with your Snail's Tales and some of your other ventures?
Yeah. The Snail's Tales is one day I was looking at a bell curve, you know, so it's called a bell curve because it looks like a bell. It's a curve that has most of it in the middle, and then there are extensions on either side of less of that. So if you looked at eye color, brown would be most of it, 68%. Then there'd be some blue eyes and then some other color eyes on either side in the smaller amounts because there's fewer of those. So one day I thought, you know, really well-meaning people, the masses, let's say, who are just doing the best they can in this society, are being taken wherever those who are taking us there are going. And if you pulled up the kind of smart side, those people can see things differently, the right brain people. If you lifted that right side up, that bell curve suddenly looks like a snail.
Mm.
And I think that we need better leadership of how of this sort of stuff I'm talking about. How do we work better together to help each other? How do we make better connections? Which is not definitely not about liberal versus conservative. It's about consciousness. It's about, can I rise up to a level where I realize that when we work together, we all do better.
Mm-hmm.
The things you guys are doing here on your show.
Transcending differences. And
yes, exactly. So as we do that, I think that there is a need. The other picture of this snail, which is bell curve, you know, has the right-sided eye was down and it pops up and works better together and takes us forward. Instead of what's been going on, it's funny, if you wanted to catch the snails, you put a half a glass of beer in your garden, and they smell it and climb up and fall in and drown. And that's what I feel like has been going on. Snail's Tales, we're writing stories that our mission is we create stories that empower children to dispel fear through whimsy.
Hmm.
And so the goal is to have fun stories that help. The first one that's out is Not All Bad Things, which is about not all bad things that come along harm us, which is, of course, directly aligned with the chrysalis. Did I say that right?
Right. Well, you know, they're just terrific, and I would love the opportunity for our listeners to contact me or Carrie, and we can get you the books, and, you know, your kids are going to love them. And more importantly, they do really, really important work. There's a lesson behind all of them, and I couldn't recommend them more. Doctor, thank you so much.
Henry Woodworth, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Take care, Henry.
Thank you.
God bless.